Welcome along. It's La Liga Weekly World Cup Special, I think we call it. Conscious that we spent 15 minutes at the start of the last podcast talking about how we weren't going to talk about politics, we will just talk about the games today. Although one slight note at the top, my irony meter was smashed to pieces when I heard Jurgen Klinsmann talking about other people cheating. Anyone old enough, honestly, anyone of a certain age, Jurgen Klinsmann calling out other people for having a culture of cheating in a World Cup. Honestly, seriously, watch that Germany 1990 team if you want to see some spectacular. Oh, honest, because the acting was so bad in those days. They obviously hadn't worked at it, but blimey, they were practicing during the games. I don't remember any Iranian footballer becoming so renowned for diving that he had to parody his own diving in a goal celebration. But there we are. That's Jurgen Klinsmann. The Germans are still lucky, aren't they? They're still getting on. Costa Rica's win opens it up for them again, and they should qualify. So that's one story of the World Cup so far. There's the long-awaited World Cup redemption for Lionel Messi, Robert Lewandowski, and, of course, Australia's Mitchell Duke, all of the greats waiting to really shine on the big stage. And there's other factors such as what job in La Liga Roberto Martinez will be getting in January. This is a nice man. Right, Terry is here. Terry, you must be loving the co-coms on TV. One guy the other day, I won't mention his name, started off with, "We don't know much about these players." Could have looked them up before you went on.
Oh, some of it is ridiculous. Don't wind me up. You know, I think you've lured me in here. No, I get a week prior they were doing domestic football and stuff. But it's the World Cup. I mean, even if you did a touch of prep on the flight over, it would have been a start. And then, you know, I'm enjoying it, I have to say. There are things I'm not enjoying. I don't enjoy as much. And do you know what? I switch it off. I switch it over. I don't listen. I do something else. But the actual football, I'm really into it now. And I've been since the start. I mean, we've got over all the shenanigans that went on with the World Cup being in Qatar and what time of the year the World Cup is. But I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And I must admit, I'm hopeful that the big teams get through and we do get some really big games, because the game we're going to feature and is going to dominate the biggest subject of this podcast was probably the first matchup, isn't it, in the competition of two teams that possibly you think going into a World Cup could win it. And I want to see more of that type of football as it progresses. I don't mind an underdog doing well and making it into the last 16 and a big story, but I want to see, when it comes to the last eight, the semi-finals, I want to see matchups between the big hitters, and Spain v Germany certainly was one.
Yes. Shall we start there then? So a 1-1 draw in the end, was that fair? Was that the right outcome?
I think it was, actually. I think Spain were disappointed. I don't know if you roll out the cliches. They were ahead and couldn't control the game. They had a spell just after they scored where you thought they were going to get the second. Asensio in particular had a really good opportunity that first sight and you're thinking it was a half chance, but when you see it's Asensio, it's the type of opportunity he does normally hit the target with. And that there was a spell there where they were really on top and looked like they were going to get the second, which would have taken the game away from Germany and put Germany out of the World Cup. But the Germans hung on in there. Flick made some changes, and one of those proved to be really hugely successful. One of the things I'm looking at in this world, I've got two things I'm looking at. I'm looking for something different from a team. Mm. You know, it would probably be a team that aren't fancy to do well. And I know it's something we've featured on the podcast over the years with La Liga, and one of my complaints, everybody plays the same, and they do play the same. Even in this World Cup, the teams that are not going to win it, that are probably not going to qualify and get out of the group, they tried to play the same as Brazil and France, and it won't succeed. And I see, you know, I don't see a lot of, stylistically, I don't see a lot of difference between the teams. The difference is in terms of quality, but all teams play the same. And the other thing I've noticed is a lack of, and again, I've gone on about this on the podcast, the traditional centre-forward. Yeah. And in last night's game, two came off the bench and both scored. And I look at so many teams and I'm thinking, Argentina in particular, with all the play that they have, if you can defend pretty deep, send them wide and let them cross it, you're going to find that a lot easier, because, you know, Lautaro Martinez and Messi and it was Papu Gomez or whoever's playing up there, you're going to defend that quite comfortably. And then when I look around to see who are the centre forwards, it's the usual lot. So last night, seeing Falkrug come off the bench, put himself about, score a tremendous goal, was one of the few exceptions where you think, well, I know all the other centre forwards, and why is that? And why is the style of play all the same? And why is the art of the traditional number nine? It's becoming redundant. You know, I was hoping that, I still hope, there's still time, that we're going to see some early 20s. All the young superstars that we're going to be seeing for the future are all the same. They're all midfield players. You know, so I why is it that the traditional number nine is going completely? It's going to become extinct if it's so Morata and Falkrug and Harry Kane are probably the youngest ones the late 20s.
Yeah. Right. Let me ask you a question about that, because John McKenzie, who actually helped me with my book, and he's a very good analyst of football, did a piece about Morata and the press after Morata came on. So Asensio played deeper, and then so he could then look at. So when Germany came out one way or the other, he was then running from deep and was able to take up a good defensive position, block the next passing line, and the press was very effective. After Morata came on, Morata wasn't as disciplined with the press, ran around a bit, but not as much, and Germany very easily got round him every time, and then into, you know, onto the attack. So that's your dilemma, isn't it? So Morata came on and scored a goal, but I wonder how much this feeds into your question about where the centre forwards have gone. Is that, are we getting to a point where centre forward, we're not going to pick them? You know, they're not being developed for the old fashioned things that they used to do, like Gary Lineker finding space in the penalty area, or Raul, and you know, that kind of, or even the more target man style of 10 centre forward. If we're going to get to a situation where we're judging them on how good they are at defending a press,
I'm never going to accept that.
Right. Yeah.
I'll never accept that. Predominantly the job of a traditional striker, and I'm talking about the big striker.
Yeah,
the focal point, back to goal, holding the ball up. Giroud is still as good as there is. So we're talking Giroud, Cavani, Luis Suarez.
And we look at La Liga.
Lewandowski.
All those guys.
The point I'm making is Harry Kane and Morata and Falkrug is new on the scene, but they're all late 20s.
Yeah,
none of the youngsters are growing up wanting to be. So is it the young players don't want to be that player, or coaches don't want that young player? So, and then Lukaku is another one. He was thrown on wounded Lukaku when they were 2-0 down. It was too late. He's obviously injured.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I'm finding. I'm waiting. I'm looking. I'm hoping to see. I guess Darwin Nunez is one of those that could be the younger version of those world-class strikers that we see. But there are teams and you still see them. And the big striker can still, if coached, I think with the game against Germany, when you're saying about Morata's press, and then, but Germany went 1-0 down when Morata scored. So they were more progressive with their play at the back. They were getting the ball forwards quicker. And they had the big striker on the pitch at the other end. So that makes the closing down, I'm not using the word press, closing down high up the pitch, different. Because there was a commentator the other day that used that word press nonstop. And he's my generation. The way he was using it was, I'm trying to get down with the young people, and it was just, it drove me mad. I was like,
did he say between the lines? Something.
there are different reasons. If you're 1-0 down and you've got a big strike on, Germany will get the ball out the back quicker because the urgency has to be there. You're fighting to stay in the World Cup, and you've got someone you can hit directly. Now Müller's quite a big striker, but he's not your traditional.
Yeah,
back to goal. He likes to get involved in the play. So that would be my concern. So, and it's something I've thought about, and I hoped that we might see some younger ones. We still might, but as yet that hasn't been the case. But stylistically, when the teams play, all tried to play the same. And from a coaching point of view, I'm looking at Argentina in particular, kept playing the ball around the back, and then it would go to either the right back or the right midfielder, who was going to be under pressure. Mexico, particularly in the first half, their desire for you to play the ball to a particular player was obvious to see. And Argentina kept obliging. And it goes back to basic coaching points that when you're a player in possession of the ball, or you're watching a game, or you're a coach, when someone passes from A to B, you should, if you're a good player, you should know what B, player B, what he can do.
Yeah.
Where can he go? What is going to be his next pass? All I see it now is when they pass it around the ball at the back, shoveling it onto a player who's showing for it, but he doesn't really want it because he knows that two players are going to be closing him down, forcing him back towards his own goal. And you get that scenario of the fullback taking touches, the pass back to the goalkeeper is cut off. He can't go to his centre half and he's trying to hook it back down the line and ends up giving away a corner or a throw in and job done if you're closing down in that manner. But I don't see, and I think that's a basic fundamental error from coaches, that when you're playing a pass to a teammate, you're not really aware of, you're getting yourself out of a hole, but you're just passing the problem on to against the team that's going to be closing you down. I'm not losing it. I give it to you. It's an angled pass to the right back or the right midfielder, and someone's going to go in and I was going to say nail him, but they don't, but they're going to get there and they're going to close him down quickly. And then it's everything's a struggle from then on. And I think that's a basic fundamental of coaching, that you're taught, you should be taught when you're young, that, you know, if you're passing to your teammate, is it, what can he do with the ball next? Yeah. You know, is he going to be under pressure? If not, pass to someone else. But we just see that. So it encourages this closing down. And, you know, it's no different to when I was playing. I was a centre forward. We played two up front in all the teams that I played for. And you edged a team, a back four, to pass to a particular player because that was the trap. That was that where everyone was going to, you're hoping it's going to go there and you're hoping it's going to be, your teammate's going to be switched on, and it's like a chain reaction of players working to close down. That's all it is. And the big striker can get you out of a lot of trouble if you're being closed down in that manner. And when I watched Argentina in the first half, they had no out ball. And the plan for Mexico was to close them down high up the pitch and make them go long. And that means if it goes long to Messi, then, you know, the central defenders are going to have a field day winning things in the air against Martinez and Messi. And so stylistically, I was hoping for something different in this tournament. And I see the inferior team is trying to play the same as the best teams. The best team so far, in my opinion, has been France. I look at France and I don't see a weakness, despite the players they got missing. And when it comes to knockout games, I think they're going to be really hard to beat. They're great. They're good at the back. I hate to say this because of a Spurs fan. The weakness might be the goalkeeper, Lloris.
Yes.
But the back four, whoever plays, is a selection of really good players they've got to play in the back four. Couldn't they came in and played right back? Varane came back into the starting lineup. I could midfield Rabiot and Tchouaméni. That's good. It's solid. And then you got the special players up front and Griezmann, the link between the midfield and the front players. Giroud does his job. I see a lot of similarities in this French team that won the World Cup. And interestingly, we're talking about players being rested and swapping, you know, and there's not many teams that are through that can do that.
Yeah.
And France in the last World Cup kept playing the same team. And I think once Deschamps settles on his best defence, I think that's the positions that might change. He'll keep playing them. He might rest them because they're through. He might rest them for this game. But, you want that seven games, if you're going to win it, to be played pretty much with the same starting 11, which Luis Enrique did, tried to do. Carvajal came in for Azpilicueta. So I'm slightly against this idea, unless you're through, of resting players and saving them for the next game and stuff. I think that progression of when they won the World Cup last time, France, it was the same team all the way through.
Would you rest, just to push to England, would you rest Harry Kane?
No, not a chance. Right. No chance, no. No, and I think he needs a goal.
Yeah.
For England to do better in the knockout stages, we don't want Harry Kane going three games without a goal and going into tougher games with, you know, that monkey on his back. He wants to play. It's interesting, Alan Shearer saying he should be rested because Alan Shearer won't want to be rested. So if he feels he's got a chance of filling his boots, I'm not saying England are going to thrash Wales, but Harry Kane, Alan Shearer, they would fancy themselves to score goals against Wales. So I think it'd be better for England if Harry Kane does play, does score. If he scored, bring him off at half-time. If England are in a good position, if they're, you know, maybe 60 minutes, bring him off. But no, I wouldn't rest Harry Kane. We're not in... that luxury position yet where England are playing well enough. They're awful against America. America were fantastic. They were super, America. They just need a striker. Big one, that would help, a big traditional striker. But America were really good. I could see what America were trying to do. I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see any identity with England. Moving the ball out the back, slowly moving it around the midfield, lots of running around the midfield, but not really getting anywhere. Players that were ineffective in the attacking positions, and we just stumbled our way through, which is disappointing, really.
To go back to being old-fashioned about stuff again, we didn't turn them round at all, England, against the USA, did we? Despite having the options of fast players, we didn't see much from Raheem Sterling in the game, did we? And so that pressure from America, let's not call it the press, from the US, put pressure on England, and they weren't good enough to play through it, in truth. They weren't good enough to play sustained, creative attacking football under that amount of pressure, and the US had the better of the game, didn't they, comfortably in the end.
I feel bad, actually. I did some stuff on American radio before the game, a couple of days before the game, and I said if England take it lightly, they might come a crop. I should have said if America take it lightly. I kind of felt bad afterwards that when you saw how good America were, to go into, I mean, England couldn't have had an easier group. They're making hard work of it. Wowsy round in America, come on. I mean, and we're going into the second game after on the back of a big victory, and everyone thinks we're going to win the World Cup. Now we're going into the third game where it's not. We should be qualified by now, and we're not. And this in this tournament, it's Phil Foden in the Euros, it's Jack Grealish. I don't think the one player would make that much difference, but there's always the case,
isn't it?
Yeah, the more we do it, the more we might be stubborn enough to think I'm not putting him on. Yeah. I'm not going to do as they tell me. So please, just if you want Phil Foden to play, just whisper it quietly. But I don't think it's down to the personnel that are playing. I think there's something lacking, and I hope they turn it around, England. And I want to see England play with that style, and you know, like we saw in the first game, but we certainly didn't see it against America. It looked like the games we've been failing in the Nations League. And it had that type of performance on it. Harry Maguire was exceptional. I don't get the pundits that play for Manchester United hammer him. I'm thinking, give the bloke a chance. I don't get that one. I get the other supporters of other teams in England because he's Manchester United, because there is this rivalry and this jealousy, and United have had money and United have won stuff in the past, and everyone's enjoying the fact they're in a difficult place. But it's quite, he's a victim of, but he was great. He brought the ball out the back well. He headed things away. But the pundits still say, yeah, but, and I'm thinking, I'm going to give the bloke a break, you know. So going back to the Spain game, I think one or two of the things, I drifted off completely on a tangent there. Rodrigo at the back is an interesting one because he does move the ball out the back well.
Yeah.
So Luis Enrique is going to have to weigh up the pros and cons of having a player at the back that shoves it into Busquets quicker than all the defenders in World Cup so far. He's not happy to just get the ball and pass it across the back and go to the fullback, get it back, go out the outside. Give Busquets a pass where his only option is to give it back to him. There was four or five times last night where he did it first time, where he pinged it into the midfield, Busquets, Pedri, Gavi, which no other centre-backs do. But the cons are the goal and one or two other chances where it looked disjointed at the back. Don't think they were helped with the equaliser with Alba coming off and Balde coming on literally a minute or so. It was in that vicinity. It wasn't Balde's fault, but there was confusion between the back four in that position where Musiala was one possession back and suddenly they're in the penalty box and having an attempt on goal. You know, Simon continues to be all over the place, you know, makes really good saves, but on three occasions gave the ball away where Spain could have been punished.
It's the irony of him being in, isn't it? In that, the bit that you think he's been picked for, he's not very good at.
I've always said that. It's always been the case. I don't see where Luis Enrique has ever thought that he is the best available with the ball at his feet, if that is so important to their play. He hasn't been, and he isn't. Mm. He's a good goalkeeper, don't get me wrong. And I might be being harsh here. I thought he might have done better with a goal. I know I'm probably the first to say it because it was such a finish, but it's his stance as a goalkeeper that his arms are down by his side, and it was almost like a defender running out and not wanting to handball. And I thought, I don't think he gave himself a chance to react, to dive right or left. He sort of run out. If you look at the replay, he runs out. Don't get me wrong, it's a powerful finish. And it's gone past him in the blink of an eye. But that's what the top goalkeepers, they can make those saves. So if he comes out in a different stance, instead of his hands down by his side as if he was going to take it in the chest, he wouldn't want to take that in the chest or the face, that's for sure, that finish. Mm. But his arms were down by his side. Before he could react and move his arms upwards, the ball had gone past him. So, but there were, I mean, he did make a similar save, I think it was from Musiala, didn't he, where he came out and had the same stance, and it did hit him in the chest. So I think that's the issues with Spain. But when you look at the alternatives to Rodrigo, Hugo Guillamon is there, who played midfield, who plays midfield for 2 years now. He had a game at the back. So I think Luis Enrique definitely wants a better passer of the ball at the back to be more progressive as opposed to the other options that he has. So I think Rodrigo will stay at centre-back.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. To the day when footballers are all midfielders, basically, is where we're heading, isn't it? No,
yep.
No centre backs, yeah. No centre forwards.
Centre forwards.
Yeah. Right. What else are we? Oh, we should mention Brazil. Brazil played today. So, In a sense, we've got less to talk about with Brazil. They haven't played when we last spoke, have we? What did you see them? What did you make of them?
Yes. Oh, very good. I think they look potential.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's interesting going into the tournament with Argentina winning the Copa America, the 36th game unbeaten run. When you look at Argentina and Brazil, Brazil look the better team at the moment. Richarlison probably the most spectacular individual performance of the tournament. Neymar being injured, that looked a nasty one. I'm not sure he's going to. They're going to have to work hard to get that swelling down and sort out the ligament damage. But they do have loads of other strikers, attacking players in
their squad. He's playing midfield, though,
far
wasn't he?
Too many. Yeah. They had far too many in their squads, hence the reason why Neymar was playing deeper.
Yeah.
But no, Brazil are going to be... They're great. It's the World Cup. You see, even in Qatar, it's the stadium. Everyone wants to watch Brazil. It's a joy to witness. The stadium full of the yellow jerseys. There have been times where Brazil haven't been particularly easy on the eye, but I think this time they are. They look the real deal. And, you know, I look forward to... It's an event, isn't it, watching Brazil in the World Cup. And thankfully, this group of players, and Richarlison, as I say, probably the best individual performance of the tournament. Spectacular second goal. They turn on the style. They've got good players. They play quickly. Now, Brazil look... I'll be definitely watching Brazil for the remainder of the tournament.
Right. One more issue is the Messi-Lewandowski issue. Obviously, great players. Messi, I would say, over his career, the best consistently, you know, in terms of the number of 10 out of 10 performances he's put in.
The body of work.
Yeah. It does irritate me, this debate, that the whole he must do it at a World Cup thing. Because my view is, well, he's had a pretty good World Cup career. I mean, okay, he hasn't dominated the World Cups in the way that he would have wanted, in the way that we've seen him do so many years in La Liga. But he won the player of the tournament in 2014 and they got to the final in 2014. Yeah. It's not bad, is it? It's not exactly a flop in World Cup terms. Lewandowski finally got his World Cup goal and sobbed afterwards, didn't he? But then, to be fair, the way Poland play, it'd be hard to score many goals.
It was four games. He'd gone four games without scoring for Poland. Yeah. That's basically what it was. But I read the story and I thought, oh, blimey, I'm surprised at that. Yeah. They must have only qualified for one and not got out of the group. And then the first game in this tournament, and it's, Lewandowski hasn't... Poland are not very good.
They
haven't ever been very good in Lewandowski's. And they probably have only ever qualified for World Cups because of Lewandowski. Then he pays the penalty of going to a World Cup with a team that's not very good. And if he doesn't score, can we really put him down as a top-class striker? Of course he bloody can. You know, and you could see the pressure when he scored. He was emotional, wasn't he? He was in tears.
Yeah.
Because of, I mean, I'm sure for the rest of his career, he's not sitting there thinking, I haven't scored a goal in the World Cup finals. But when it came to this, and he didn't score in the first, and then the story led a life of its own, then you could see that the pressure got to him.
Yeah.
No, Lewandowski is, I mean, he's good is an understatement. He's a great striker.
Yeah. The thing with the World Cup, it is such a huge thing. I love it, but I'm not sure what conclusions you should ever draw from it because it is only a few games, isn't it? And so,
Yeah.
but that's what makes it so exciting is that massive amount of jeopardy in it because you do, it is sort of legend making, isn't it? If you do well at the
Yeah.
World Cup. You rip a couple of 30 yarders in at the World Cup, and people remember you forever,
oh,
even
exactly.
if you're a pretty average player.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's what it means, isn't it? And because basically the Saudi Arabian player made a mistake, didn't he? He slipped or gave the ball away, didn't he?
Yep.
And then Lewandowski taps it in, and then that's it. That's the
yep.
difference. This
Yeah.
guy who scored all these hundreds of goals and won all these
Confirmed.
trophies, yeah,
It's confirmed. He's pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good point, isn't it? Because if George Weah had gone to one World Cup with Liberia and they'd lost all their three games, everyone would say, ah, he's no good, really.
Yeah.
Better off not going.
Goal. Yeah.
For the legend.
No, I mean, that's what's great about them. You let Fulkrug coming on. He's been playing most of his career in the second division.
Mm.
And, you know, somebody comes on and Gary Lineker said to Jürgen Klinsmann, he could be your Toto Skelechi. Might be a lot of our listeners going, or might have been watching that go,
yeah.
Who? It was literally the story of the World Cup, isn't it? This player that I loved, never heard of him before.
Yeah.
Didn't hear much of him afterwards. Probably being unkind to him there, but in terms of the national team and other tournaments, it never happened. In Serie A, he did well. But suddenly this player appeared from nowhere and had a scintillating World Cup, and you know, he's remembered. That would have been, what World Cup would that have been?
1990.
It was 1990, yeah. So we're talking 30-odd years on, still being remembered. And it does do that, the World Cup. It's, you know, I'm enjoying it. It has the makings of a good tournament. There's good teams in it. And I'm finding it really interesting to watch now on a daily basis. I'm picking my games, I have to be honest. I can't do the 10 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. But the games I've picked have been good. Picking the obvious
you,
ones. And I've missed the most of the nil-nils where I've gone, meh, I'm not sure about that one. And I've looked and keeping a check on it and whatever else I'm doing, and I'm thinking, oh, good choice.
Yeah. No, you'll have to start letting everyone know which one you're missing, and then we can all avoid that game.
Well, we've got the last group games all kick off at the same time, don't they? So
yes.
That alleviates that. Really got picky games there.
Yeah.
And then we've got the knockout stages, which are going to be really good to watch.
It's better than now
probably
these
watch
days.
All
so,
of those.
You can open your laptop, can't you, and find that other game, can't you now? So do that for the knockout, for the last group games, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, we'll leave it there because obviously I'm conscious we have to keep these short because people have got games to watch, Terry. They've got to get back to work, everybody. And yeah, we will see you
first
for another.
First game started.
Yeah, I know. We're missing it, aren't we? I'm going into a nervous, cold sweat. Right. We will be back with another podcast. We'll squeeze it in between games at some point. We'll see you for that. Thank you, everybody. Bye bye.